Welcome back to the Final Shot Podcast. Today, the show is brought to you by Onnit. If you're not Onnit, get Onnit at onnit.com. Alpha Brain, Shroom Tech Sport, kettlebells, maces, battle ropes, you name it, Onnit's got it. So hit them up and get all your workout and supplement needs from Onnit. TKO Beards, wearing their shirt today. Some of the best beard oil products I've ever put in my beard. You guys know, ever since I've been doing this show, I've always had a beard, and I try to keep it as maintained as possible, and I do that with TKO Beards. USG Canada, some of the best fight gear in the game. They do all my stuff, all my gloves, any kind. They do all my track suits, anything like that. We're going to be doing a hat line through them here pretty soon. So USG Canada, my boy Howie makes some of the, he's one of the most creative guys when it comes to walkout gear too. So hit him up and get your stuff. The Clinch Fight Shop, you want anything when it comes down to Muay Thai, kickboxing, they have boxing, everything, jiu-jitsu, it doesn't matter. They're the best fight shop in Edmonton, Alberta. It's the Clinch Fight Shop. We're also brought to you by Sovereign Extracts. I don't know if you guys like to get high or if you use CBD and THC for medicinal purposes. Sovereign Extracts makes some of the best products on the planet. Hit them up. And guys, you can find all of my sponsors and the promo codes with the links on linktree.com/thefinalshotpodcast. Saves me from having to spout out every one of them because I don't remember. Again, it's linktree.com/thefinalshotpodcast. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest today is former three-time Muay Thai world champion. He's also the promoter for MTK Alberta and the promoter for Muay Thai World Cup. Ladies and gentlemen, Kieran Kittle, how's it going?
Very well, thank you very much. And thanks for the introduction there. You've got more sponsors than any fighter I've ever met.
There's a lot of stuff to keep the train going on this show.
So of course,
we've been doing it for so long, since 2014, I believe. So yeah, we try to keep all the sponsors on the show, stuff that we use and stuff that we believe in, because we've had sponsors on here before and they paid us a buttload of money to do it, and then it turns out that they're just shit. So we give them the boot. We keep the guys that work. But Kieran, this has been a podcast long overdue.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I've been here 2.5 years and a lot's happened in the 2.5 years, you know, putting COVID to a side. So it's a nice time to talk about it because we're fingers crossed, of course, we're coming out of COVID, or at least planning to come out of COVID. So, you know, I could share with you some of the things that we're proposing to do. And obviously the plans that we're working on with the promotions, and with some of the fighters.
Well, let's start with a little bit of your background, because you are a three-time world champion.
Former three-time world champion. You can look at me now, I'm fat and bald. There's no way I'd fight now. No way.
How old are you?
Yeah, so I started in 1992.
Okay.
We're 12 years old, and we were just in a badminton court, and the coach at the time was a guy called Sean Toomey, who's still a friend of mine, and still we speak on the phone probably once a week, and he's still teaching in England. So big up to Sean Toomey. And how it began was my brother Alan. He was training at university. He was training to be something to do with medicine, etc. And he was training in Thai boxing, and I actually remember the phone call. He called up on the house phones before these things come about. And that's how old I am. And I remember the phone call distinctly, and he was like, send to my mum, find the local Thai boxing club, Kieran will love it. Because I used to play, like, you know, a lot of football, soccer, you call it, and all types of team sports, and I hated when people made mistakes. And I used to, you know, get rallied up, etc. So with a solo sport like Thai boxing, if you make a mistake, it's down to you. So you have to blame yourself. So, yeah, I went. I've got to be honest with you. I was training once a week. It was at, like I said, a badminton court. And I didn't compete till I was about 14. And I was, like I said, once a week. It was okay. Enjoyed it. Did loads of other sports. I didn't really get the bug until I had a few fights. Mm-hmm. And when I had a few fights, and then all of a sudden I started going to events and et cetera, people are like, oh, when you're fighting next? And then all of a sudden you go, oh, oh, maybe I'm not too bad after all. And I turned pro at 15, so 1995.
Wow.
And it's very different in England to here
Yeah.
with pros and amateurs, because this is what, which we'll get to later with the pro and amateur scene. For me, apart from IFMA rules, which is, you know, the elbow pads and head guard, etc., a fight is a fight. So in Europe and Asia, you've had a fight and you just fight. And it counts as a fight. You don't have like 30 amateur fights, then returning pro. It's just you build up fight numbers. So yeah, I was 15 and I fought like my first like non-junior fight, which was like, you know, no head guard, you know, and just bare shins. And then, and to be honest with you, yeah, I mean, I started to enjoy it, but I didn't really get the bug till I was about 17, and I won a national title at 17. And I was 17 and the guy was 34. I'll never forget that. And as the name started getting around in local magazines, and my brother was my coach at the time, and I started to really enjoy it. But those times, like, training has changed a lot. The education's changed a lot. My brother was learning too as a coach, and I was, you know, like I said, we had part-time facilities. It was three times a week. I used to get there 1 hour early with my brother and set up the gym. So we'd put the mats down. It wasn't full-time facilities. Jeez. And you'd put the ring up, you'd hook it on, and you'd have this sports hall, which was a scout hall. And you'd hook a bag up, and off you went for your two-hour session. But those times, it wasn't necessarily about skill. It was just about train as hard as you could in those 2 hours. Literally, it would be like, okay, go on the bag, hit the bag as hard as you can, and then in between, you have a 1 minute off, you just do burpees to the minute. And it was like, do five rounds like that. I was like, okay. So you just went along. And then when you first were fighting, it was like, oh, let's make weight. Just don't eat for 2 days,
oh,
3 days.
Jesus Christ.
And that's how it was. You know, just we didn't know any different.
Yeah.
And then you would fight. And then basically the person with the biggest heart and energy and power would win. And then I think I was about 19. And I fought this my first ever TIE fighter, and I took the fight on 5 days' notice because someone had pulled out or something. I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And even though I was stronger and bigger than this TIE fighter schooled me. He threw me everywhere in the clinch. He teeped me to pieces. I just couldn't touch him, and I lost some points. And I was like, what the hell happened there? You know, and then I started to, we had the VHS videos, stopped watching VHS videos, and then started doing stints in Holland and stints in Thailand, just to redefine my skills, because I had the heart and, you know, what I wanted to do, and I really wanted to do it. I just needed to up my gaming skills.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. I started to really discover Thai boxing for me as an art, not till I was about 19, maybe 20. And then going to Holland for training camps, going to Thailand for, you know, well, I lived there from 23 till I was 27.
Jeez.
So just to redefine my skills. And yeah, I think those things helped. But also, I always have to go back to the rawness. The rawness helped as well, like, because you've got to want it, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to do all those bits of training. You've got to go through the sessions that you don't like. And then, 21, I won my first title at 21, world title at 21. Wow. And then 26, and then my last ever fight, I was 30. So three world titles over nearly 10 years, two weight classes. Not too bad.
Well, when it comes down to Muay Thai, there's two prominent names in Canada that I can think of, and it's yourself and Jason Fenton.
Yep.
Fenton's a fantastic coach.
Oh, yeah.
I've never...
And also Mike Miles as well. Let's not forget Mike Miles.
Please. Oh, yeah, let's not forget. Mike Miles is a little crazy, but he's cool.
Well, I just think this, you know, the end of the day, like when I was living in England, and anyone mentioned Canada,
yeah,
you'd always put what's going on there? You'd always say, can you see me? Sorry, just cut out that for some reason.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, you'd always associate Mike Miles with Canada.
Yeah.
And if you look at some of the fighters that he's produced, you know, there's a big long list of fighters that have spawned from him.
That's true.
And you have to pay respect to that.
I
and
apologize.
I tell everyone that, you know. You know, I came in, my angle was a bit different. I came in from another country.
Yeah.
You know, I also was involved in promoting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, and Jason Fennon's, he was, I think he was fighting roughly about, I think he's about the same age as me, I'm sure, maybe. And he was fighting sort of this side and making his name in Canada and North America and,
yeah.
And you know, going to America to fight a couple of times and things like that. But it's very hard for North Americans. I've always said it because they've never had the platform or exposure or the regularity. So in England, I'm not joking, again, push COVID to a side, there's a show every weekend, at least.
Really?
You know, whether it's a small one that's 200, 300 people or one that's bigger, we'll say 2,000 people.
Yeah.
There is literally shows all the time there. And if you're a guy that wants to fight, you can guarantee yourself you can get 6, 7, 8 fights injury permitted a year. You try and do that in Canada or North, even America too. It's very hard to do that. You know, you'll be happy to get 3 fights, 4 fights in a year.
Wow. So when I look at kickboxing and Muay Thai, it never got over in North America so much. And it's very weird because it's a highly entertaining sport.
Well, I've got a theory on it. It's so UFC is big, and I think UFC is big. It's not MMA, but it's big because it's an American sport. Mm. And I think in America, things that are bigger in America or North America, they've got to be from America. And I think like with Thai boxing coming, the best fighters aren't from North America.
No.
You know, they're from Asia or Europe. So you're not going to get a lot of American winners. I'm not saying this won't change. So I think it's happened because remember you had the full contact.
Yeah.
And you had some great fighters in that. And that didn't really adapt or change or develop. It should have changed into Thai boxing or K1. So I think, like, if you look at all the American sports, the reason why they're so big is because they have American heroes in it. They have American characters in it. They have American, it's American-driven, American advertising, they're American sponsors. And if you want to put on a show and you've got 5 good American fighters and you bring over 5 guys from Thailand, guess what? 5 Americans are likely to lose. And you don't. And American TV, they don't want that. They want American winners.
Very true.
You know? And I think this is the reason, you know, with what I'm trying to do with Muay Thai World Cup, is start off from grassroots, which we can get to later, but we have to sort of reset everything.
Yeah.
And then try and build up, but it's not going to happen overnight.
No. So you came over here from the UK. Why did you pick Canada?
We haven't got a long enough podcast. No. you know, I've got a young family. I've got 3 young boys. They're aged 3, 5, and 6. And I wanted... Look, it's the end of the day. Have you got children?
I have 2 children. I have a 10-year-old and a 1-year-old.
Right, so you understand it completely, what I'm going to say next. At the end of the day, of course, I want a better life for myself. But when you have kids, you want a better life for them, you know, and what everything that they can experience. Now, I have an uncle that lives in Calgary, and he's been here for 52 years. He's 74 years old. Yeah, he's been here 52 years, and he has... son and daughter, you know, in their 40s now. And I remember being at family reunions, weddings, things like that. And I remember my other cousin who lives in Ireland, myself, and then my cousin who lives here in Canada. And I remember him, hey, what did you do for summer? And I'd be like, played a bit of football. I looked to my Irish cousin. He would say, what did you do? Oh, we just went over, played a bit of football. And then we'd turn around to him, what did you do? And he was like, oh, I went out hiking. I went out skiing. I went on the skidoos. I went out mountain climbing. And I was like, I fucking hate this guy. I really do. He's doing all the things I wanted to do. He's like Indiana Jones, we used to call him. Indiana fucking Jones. And it's like, you know, so, but now looking forward, I want my kids to do all that.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a great experience. And I live outside of the city too, which is great for them. And, I just want them to have a better life. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's the other things, like the owner of the gym, Francois.
Yeah.
We've been friends since 2003 when I was living in Thailand. And he came over to Thailand. And what happened is the manager of the gym, Rob Cox, he still lives in Thailand. He called me up and said, hey, there's 2 Canadian guys coming in. Would you mind just showing them around the gym? Because he was at a stadium or something. So I showed him around the gym, and I remember it because it was March and it was like minus 40 here or minus 35, and they came to Thailand and it was plus 40. And I said, listen, guys, you've just got off the plane, chill for a few days before you get into training. But they were like, no. And they went to the gym and they were training, skipping super hard, 30 minutes in, like you know.
Dying, yeah.
So no, we've become friends since then, kept in contact. And I have wanted to leave England for a long time. I had opportunities potentially in America and a few other places. But I think Canada for me, especially Alberta anyway, ticks a lot of those boxes. Good for kids, like I said, good schooling, but much open space. I like the outdoors as well. And I think you get more of your money in terms of property and things like that.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just it's nice to have a change up too. And, you know, so far, so good.
So in the UK, was the lack of outdoor activities due to it just being too expensive or just lack of opportunity?
Lack of opportunity. Okay. You don't have the facilities like you do here. You know, you got better. I'm going to take a guess now, but I think Alberta is 2 times the size of England, if I'm right.
Probably, yeah.
Or is it BC? One of the two. And the population, 75 million. So just Jesus. Work that out. It's nuts. Like, you know, it's just too busy for me. Crime is obviously higher because there's more people. I experienced a lot of crime and seeing a lot of crime. And I didn't want that for the kids. I didn't want the classrooms of 40 kids, 45 kids of classrooms. Just fucking nuts. I don't want that. Yeah. You know? So, yeah.
Well, that's good. You got over to a better place. And I'm sure you go back home and visit every once in a while.
I went back for one of my brother's weddings. And it was hectic. We went back for 2 weeks. Because then everyone wants to see you. So it doesn't really count as a holiday.
Yeah.
I went for the wedding. It was a great wedding. But I was glad to be back. Let's put it that way. You're more tired from just seeing everyone for 2 weeks. So
back in the UK, you headed up MTK MMA. Is that how that went down?
Yeah, so how this happened was MTK Global, which was a boxing management company first and foremost,
yep.
Although they just started boxing promotions, they wanted to move into MMA. So they flew me out to Dubai. And now I knew some of the team already. And they wanted me to kickstart it. But when I landed in Dubai, I said to them, look, I'm looking to move to Canada in the next 12 to 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, okay, you come in, build it up, sign some guys, get the name in, you know, put it on the map. And then when you go to Canada, you can hand the reins over.
Okay.
So that's what I did. We did, I think, 2 shows. We signed a lot of guys. Our first big signing was Darren Till, of course.
Yeah.
And after that, they started bringing in other countries. They started bringing in fighters and they have managers all around the world now, which is really good. And then, of course, when I left for 2 or 3 weeks in Canada, I started to do a little bit for them. And then John Gillies, who's a friend of mine back in England, I think he now runs most of the MTK MMA side about signing fighters. So I stepped out of that, but I did turn around and say, I will be back, but I want to be back for boxing.
Okay.
But give me 2 or 3 years because I need to know how the land lies.
Yeah.
Because in England, promoting a show, every country is different. I promote shows in Baghdad, Iraq. I promote shows and co-promoted in Los Angeles, co-promoted in Boston.
Wow.
And did shows around Europe too.
Yeah.
Every country has different rules and regulations. England's the easiest.
Really?
England is you turn up to an arena, you just say, here's the date I want. You pay for the date. You then get the show insured. You then book your referees and judges. You're good to go. There's no commission.
That's the easiest ever.
Yeah. So, but I knew about coming to America for all those years. Hold on, let me just adjust my story about that.
That's okay.
Is that better?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's happening with my screen here. I'm going to have an old laptop. Any sponsors out there for laptops? No, so, yeah, when I can't, when, I mean, before I had fighters come to America, so I knew all about commission. And then when I started MTGP, which was my promotion in England, when that started doing co-promotions with Lion Fight, we then started to work with the commissions there. So I knew that they're hard work.
Yeah.
But you know, some aren't. Some are just they're there to do the job and they're just there to oversee you, and it's part of how it is of the city or state that you live in. So I knew a little bit about it, but that was the reason for MTK. Like, you know, when I first come over, not just promote straight away.
That's a huge name to even be involved with, MTK, period. When it comes to boxing, you talk Tyson Fury. That's all you got to say.
Well, yeah. As soon as you say Tyson Fury, you'll instantly know who MTK was. We got Billy Joe Saunders. Yeah. You know, you had Cole Frampton just retired last week. You know, you've got so many fights. I think now, including the MMA guys, you've got about 500 odd guys signed to them.
Wow.
So, yeah, and they've got offices all over now in Eastern Europe, obviously the Middle East. England is heavily involved. England has like subdivisions, like North, South, Midlands, gyms all over, affiliates all over. So yeah, no, it's a huge company that's only getting bigger too. So I mean, if Fury beats Joshua as well, you know, it's going to raise the stock market, not just for
Huge,
Fury and boxing,
huge.
but for MTK.
Yeah. So you stepped down, heading up MTK MMA. You move to Canada and you start Muay Thai World Cup.
Yeah, so I wanted to my obviously what I do is Thai boxing, so I know Thai boxing promoting the easiest ever, and I knew a lot of the Thai boxers already that come here. And of course, the other thing as well, which was really good, was working at Elite already had a stable of fighters, which I always say when you're promoting, you need that. You know, you need that. This isn't like a UFC or a ONE FC where you have like a huge financial backing. This is, if you have a stable of fighters, even if they're five, six, seven guys, at least you've got a core of guys you can put on every event, you know, that can bring a crowd, and then you can build from that. So that was the first thing. And then I met the Calgary Combat Commission. That didn't go down too well. And then and then it just wasn't feasible. And then what happened is I was in the gym, and a student came in, Zachary Many Wounds, and he was First Nation. And I explained to him, I said, I really want to do a show. Here's what I've done, a Muay Thai Grand Prix, and you know, I promote various events around Europe and the Middle East and things like that. But I'm having difficulty. And he's like, let's see what we can do. So we then basically what we did is then is Zachary went off to his father, who's a big boxing fan, and they started all the paperwork with lawyers, and then set up the Sutina Combat Commission, which was then a hell of a lot easier to deal with than the Calgary Combat Commission. You know, emails were easier, calls were back forward easier, a lot more affordable. And he likes fights, and they just want to put fights on. They don't want to stop a company straight away by doing a great show and then charging over the odds, and then you can't do a show again. What's the point in that? It's long term, not short term. So yeah, that's how that began. And then I developed the Muay Thai World Cup. But what I wanted to do was something a bit different. Now, I mean, quote me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure you'll agree with me, was I just felt here especially that the promotion side of things wasn't done correctly. And what I meant by that was, so you had one poster, right? You had one poster, and that was it. And I was like, no, I want all the fighters to have their own individual posters. I want the fighters to hustle for me as well, like, you know, to sell tickets, but I want them to feel special. So then we started doing videos for every fighter, so every fighter feels part of the promotion, you know, and they should do too. You know, they're, at the end of the day, they're the ones fighting it, they're the ones who are putting on the shows. And obviously, me being a former fighter, I understand it. So that's how I pushed it. And it was, as you saw, the videos that we did and all the promos that we did. It wasn't just like Team Elite. It was other guys from other gyms. We had obviously Tim Lowe on. We had Hassan from Toronto, Michael Fitzpatrick versus Chris McMillan. These are guys that aren't from my gym, but they should be promoted as well. They're Canadians and they're good level fighters. So I just pushed a different angle to how I wanted to promote the show. And, you know, first show that we did, I don't know if you were there or not, but you know, we had 2,335 people, and it didn't, to be fair, I wanted to push it a bit more in terms of marketing. So I then planned for the one afterwards and how to push that more. Basically, when you go to a show, you should know, you should by the end of the show, you should know when the next show is on. And
That's
that's what I
true,
wanted to do, is promote a show while the fights are happening. You're promoting the next show. And then you get a story, then you get a business, long-term business, not just, okay, one show and then that's it. You know, we wanted to develop this into a long plan. And then, of course, COVID came in and fucked everything up, as it does. It's fucked everyone up, let's be honest. So we did do a COVID relief show, which was, you know, like four fights, outdoor reserve, beautiful, you know, mountain backdrop. That was like a charity. So we raised $5,500 for a Sutina youth project. So it went to building like a skateboard park for them because they didn't have, the finances had lost because of all the COVID. So that was good. But now we're just thinking now of, okay, and then when COVID finishes, we now got to think, right, how do we push for the next show?
Yeah.
And get everyone excited again, because people are down, as you know. People are down at the moment, and it's you don't want to give people false hopes at the same time, because you know this gym opened and then 10 days later gym closed. It gets people up and down, so just trying to work on something to push it.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't attend your first event because I had a dog in the fight and I didn't want that dog to fight, so I didn't show up, but I did watch it.
Who was that?
Luke Spicer is a training partner. Was a training partner of mine. Yep. I also coached him.
Lovely man.
Super, super nice guy. I didn't want him to fight.
No,
because I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, Hassan's a beast. You know,
he's a beast.
Yeah, Hassan's a beast. You know, and Luke brought a good crowd with him. Nice man. Very easy to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, it was really easy. I think he knew what he was getting into, but he wanted one last fight for the Canadian title, and you can't blame him at the same time. You know, it was a first big show, of course. I think he wanted to put his name out there a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Hassan, at the time, I think Hassan was 27, 28, a young buck, strong. I mean, I've held pads for the guy. He is strong as fuck.
Very good. Very good fighter.
Too, and fast. So it was always up against him. But, hey, you know, it is what it is.
Unfortunately, Luke has a lot of irons in the fire. And that one was a short notice iron that shouldn't have been put in the fire, in my opinion. And I talked to him probably a week ago, and he's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that fight. But hindsight's 20/20. But the show was fantastic.
Yeah. It was some good fights on it.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to sell about 1,000 tickets. That's what I thought. And then I realized, so I've got to learn about the business here, of course, because I'm still learning about the business. And it was like 2 days before the fight, we had hundreds of emails and messages. Got tickets for the fight. I was like, yeah, but why didn't you book this in advance? And I just realized here they do a lot of things last minute.
Yeah,
there was lineups outside, and I was like, why didn't you guys just book these tickets in advance? But whatever, you know. So yeah, we went over the odds of what I thought we were going to sell, and it was just a great night, because I wanted to make it a bit different. I wanted an opening ceremony, so we had the First Nation dancers come out. That was amazing. And we did a laser show. The MC we brought over from England is a good friend of mine, Peter Lowe. He came into the ring with a special entrance. Then we had the Canadian national anthems and, you know, spotlight on her. And then I made from the amateur to the professional fights. The amateurs were all in light. And then when it turned pro, all the lights went off, and it was just the ring that got the attention and the fighters got the attention. And there were some wars, you know. Scott McKenzie's fight was an absolute war. Chris McMillan versus Michael Fitzpatrick was an absolute war.
Yep.
So Tim Lowe, boom, head kick knockout. Yeah. The four-man tournament, which Cody Jerome won. And, of course, we gave him the Warrior headpiece as well. It was a great night.
Now that Tim Lowe fight was originally supposed to be Markel Wedderburn.
Yes.
There was some hoopla that went on there. He decided he was going to go over to Thailand and says he got strong-armed into a fight, is what it is. But he didn't have a fight.
It's difficult. But it's problem for Markel was that he had to fight. I don't care about the circumstances. He had the fight.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a video got into the commission's hands.
Okay.
And the commissioner said no. It doesn't matter if he didn't want the fight. Apparently just went down onto one knee just to try and get the fight over with. But at the end of the day, in the commissioner's and North American law, is you've been knocked down. It looked like you got knocked down legitimately by an elbow, and you want to fight 2 weeks later. So they didn't want it. So I had to obviously deliver the bad news, but you got safety first, the end of the day.
Well, it is what it is. Like, you can't justify too much over a video. Like, you see something happen, and that's what you have to go off of.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I didn't see the video, so I have no idea. I can't talk anything about it, but I know that there was a lot of trash talk going up to that fight. I was excited for that one.
Yeah. Listen, like... And I think they're still trash talk.
Yeah.
They're still trash talking. And I don't know what Markel's doing, because I think he's got some nightclub in town, and he's running something else, he said. And he's an older man. I think he's in his 40s, I think.
Yeah.
So does he want to continue, or does he want that fight with Tim Lowe still? But at the end of the day, you know, it's Tim Lowe versus Mark McKinnon next. And we'll decide what happens after that.
That's a very, very tough fight.
You know what? It's a great fight. This will be the fourth time this fight was supposed to happen. COVID obviously delayed it. And then Mark had injuries twice before. He had a fight in Dubai.
Yeah.
And then came back. He had a shin infection. It just swelled up and he couldn't fight. And then, of course, he went to England to have a fight, which he won, but he broke his jaw.
Oh.
So he was out for a few months, obviously. And then now the fight's back on. So we just, it's like now, but the fights, listen, we're going to do a show in the summer. We don't know the date exactly yet. I've had to sit down with a few people and just work a strategy of how to do it. I've had to look around the world on how they're doing events that people have had lockdown. It's no good looking at Texas and Florida.
No.
I'd love it to be Florida and Texas here because we'd be open. But I tried a couple of systems, what they were doing, and it's not feasible to basically the law and how it works.
Yeah.
So we've had to work out a couple of other ideas and how to do the show. And it's a head fuck, don't get me wrong, but I'm confident in July we'll do a Muay Thai World Cup.
I got a couple of buddies that are over in, they're fighting for ONE FC right now, and they're in quarantine. And they opened their door to their hotel room, and there's guards out there telling them to go back inside.
Yeah.
They got you on lockdown.
Yeah, you know, I think like I've got like a good friend of mine lives in Dubai. I actually have an old student of mine, English guy. He lives in Wuhan. I know. And when it first happened, he lived in a tower block too. And what happened is it first happened. They basically fenced off that this whole it was full of expats. So they fenced off the whole of this building and put like a Circle K type grocery store there.
Yeah.
And you had to book it on your phone or your laptop, and you go downstairs, you collect it, you come up. Wow. And now it's for 6 weeks like that. And you couldn't leave it. You couldn't leave your room apart from to get your food. Jeez. And I think you're allowed 30 minutes, like prison really, and then walking around. And then I think he opened up, same sort of protocols as what we're having now. And then they had a major lockdown where it was like real curfews. Like if you stepped out of line, you're going to get shot in the leg. Let's put it that way. But now they're open, aside from airports, which is a quarantine. And it's the same with my friend in Shanghai. They had all these rules and strict rules, but they're open now. Yeah. And people are just freely walking around, no masks, restaurants are fine. Obviously, no one's, if you come into the country, you've got a quarantine 14 days at the hotel, exactly like you just said.
Yeah.
And they're flying and they're doing really well. And they were like, oh, it sucked at first, but now they understand why they had to do it. So I know. I know, but like you said earlier, hindsight's a wonderful thing. It's too late now.
I'm just very confused by the whole situation. I don't even want to get into it because I've talked way too many times about fucking COVID on this damn thing.
Oh, and it's so annoying.
And it always comes up because I'm always talking to a promoter or a fighter or somebody that this directly affects because it's hard for guys to make money. And when guys are able to fight, they got to go through so much bullshit that it, realistically, the people that are getting in the cage or the ring and fighting, this shit ain't going to kill you.
No.
It's going to make you sick for a couple of weeks and you'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you're talking cream of the crop, fittest guys.
Yeah.
Do you know who I actually feel sorry for? So the guys in ONE FC, the guys in UFC, they're still getting opportunities to fight. I actually feel for the guys that are, you know, like just below that level.
Yep.
Because it's not what you can only really put a show on unless you've got pay-per-view numbers or a television or sponsorship deal. But really, those ones that are on the small level, they don't have that. You know, they don't have that. That is their chance to shine, to show them, to try and get to the ONE FC, the UFCs, you know, all those big shows. And I feel sorry for them because they've all been inactive completely. I mean, UFC guys, don't get me wrong, it's been hard for them. They've had to do the COVID tests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they're still competing.
Yep.
The same with ONE FC guys. I know they had troubles at first, but at least they're still competing. But those guys underneath, they're sort of like, you know, the ones, the up and coming stars, the kids, of course, the juniors, nothing for them.
Well, something people don't bring up also is there's guys out there that are a little bit older that this directly affects, and now the sport's going to pass them by and it's time to retire.
Yeah, that's true.
Which sucks because
it really does. You know, it really does. You know, and outside of the fight sport, obviously, as we know, it's affected everyone, but it just seems to really affect people in sports.
Yeah.
But low-end sports, grassroots sports, is affected the most.
Big time.
You know? So, yeah, it's a shame. But, again, no more COVID talk. No,
we'll stop talking about it now. So, with Muay Thai World Cup, when do you envision a return?
July.
July. Okay. Yeah. Fans or no fans, it's gonna go down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're gonna work it out somehow. But it will be, like I said, it'll be over the summer. I'd love to have July, but it's potentially August. But we're just, like I said, as you've got the AHS, we've got their rules and regulations, and we've got to review it every week. But we're convinced there'll be an event in the summer. And then after that, we're looking September onwards to hopefully have some crowds in, you know.
And then on the opposite side of Muay Thai World Cup, you have MTK Alberta.
Yeah. So with MTK, I mean, like I said originally, it's a slow burner for this one. So we signed three guys. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do, I'm looking at signing another two or three guys too. What I'm looking to do is start very small. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to sign like established superstars. I wanted to sign a couple of up-and-comers. Mm-hmm. They bring a nice crowd with them and or have some sort of background where they can really sell a good story.
Okay.
And then what I want to do is put them on. I mean, I'll promote the shows, no problem. Yeah. Put them on some shows, but get regular fights for them. Try and get them four or five fights a year, maybe, just for two years, 3 years. And then that gets them on the platform.
Okay.
And then, of course, you start to get the phone calls ringing then for the bigger fights, which MTK have the accessibility to do. That's the good thing about MTK, you know. They work with Top Rank. They work with Eddie Hearn and Dazon. They work with all these promoters. But The only thing is, we talked about grassroots fighters, because they've only had one or two fights, it's very hard to do a show with them at the moment.
Yep.
So I've got to wait for them to start competing, which again will be in the summer too. And then they can start competing. I'm going to try and roll them out. Lots of fights, build their name up. The ultimate goal for MTK Alberta is, of course, to one day have a fight that can be a world champion. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't it be great to have a world title here?
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
It'd be awesome. And there's no reason why it can't be done. It's not going to happen in the next 3 years. It's likely to happen in the next five.
Yep.
But we just need to just build it up. That's all we need to do. So the MTK Alberta will be hosted by IFL TV, which is a free stream TV. They usually have about 100,000 viewers.
Okay.
So we just try and get these guys on this show and build them up properly, build up a nice story. And then and they get a good following. But I've always believed that if you're a fighter from a hometown, you need to get your hometown people behind you.
100%.
That's what it is. And the good thing about Calgary is you have all different types of cultures here too.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the guys who's fighting on the show is Lebanese. He's got a really big Lebanese following. So try and bring your Lebanese crowd. Then eventually you'll get Lebanese sponsors and you get this big backing.
Yeah.
You know, then you get big backing. What happens is when you have a big support is then people will come to you. You know,
yep.
So, and that's the plan. It's just with the guys I've signed, just to build them up nicely, and get them some good fights, get them some highlight reels, and then eventually we can pit them against guys that are on the way down, and then eventually you get them up there, and who knows what goes from there.
Well, it'd be fun to see a promotion kind of jump on the Canadian title to the NCC titles. Because we don't put a lot of stock in our Canadian stuff, and I think that that's something that's missed by a lot of promotions. And yep. I'd love
this
to see.
Is what, if you look to the Muay Thai World Cup, this is what we've done with WBC.
Yep.
Have Canadian champions. They've got a defender belt. They've got to be ranked. Hence why we built the ranking system. And then you build it up from there. You know, you can't, you shouldn't, like I said, like, because what happens is, I mean, in the UK, or England, you've got the Lonsdale belt, of course.
Yep.
And everyone knows what the Lonsdale belt is. Mm-hmm. And you've got to defend it five times, actually, to keep it.
Okay.
It might have changed to three, but I'm sure it's five. But at least it gives it some credibility, mm-hmm. you know? And I think if you've got a Canadian champion, they should be defending that belt
100%.
A good few times before they even think about moving on, you know?
Like back in the day in WCW wrestling, they had a title called the TV title. And whenever there was TV, the guy had to defend this belt. I think that's what a Canadian title should be kind of like. Like, if you get an opportunity to defend that damn thing or fight for it, go do it.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I think they
It makes perfect sense. Absolutely perfect sense, you know.
So let me run this by you. A friend of mine, Manny Montreal, you probably know who he is.
In fact, funny enough, I've actually only just been introduced to him 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah, he was on Facebook, and I added him, and I like his stuff.
Fantastic guy. He came to me with an idea about approaching the WBC to make a WBC North title, which would be a Canadian title, which I think would be a great idea, seeing as how they did it for WBC Muay Thai.
I can make that happen.
It's not my idea, it's Manny's. So if you guys do it,
hit up. Well, listen, it's all about contacts. So I could just,
yeah.
No, it's always a way of doing it. It makes perfect sense to me.
I think it'd be a great idea because we have a lot of other titles that are floating around in Canada that don't get a lot of clout because of what they are.
Like, of course
you
got, not.
You have the CPBC, which is run by an idiot. And then you have the NCC, which used to be big but kind of fizzled off somehow.
Yeah.
And then you have an NABA North American title, which is held by the only one guy I can think of is a cruiserweight, Ryan Rosicky, who's going to defend that next weekend.
He's but awesome. I like him.
Just a killer, man.
Oof. But yeah, I just sort of got to know of him, shall I say, a few months ago. And I was like, because there's a couple of guys who come to gym from Cape Breton. He's from, isn't he?
Yeah.
And they were like, check this guy out. So I checked him out. And I was like, whoa, this nasty guy's got a killer hook.
Yeah.
And I followed him on Instagram. I like him. He's very like, he tells jokes, but he tells them like
dead serious.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, but you can tell that he takes his business seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wants big things out of sport. He's not taking this. He's not cutting any corners. You can tell, like, you know.
No. I'll give everybody a quick update on Ryan Rosicky. Ryan Rosicky is still fighting next week, but it will not be against Salar Ghulami. He pulled out of the fight, apparently has a broken nose and has to have surgery. So he will be fighting a former Canadian cruiserweight champion or heavyweight champion, one of the two.
Yeah, I think he's fighting a heavyweight guy.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Sly. I'm going to butcher his name. So I'm
yeah, and I think he's like 6'5 as well.
He's absolutely huge.
Yeah.
So,
well, fair play to Ryan, you know. This is a fighter. I like these type of guys, you know.
Yeah.
I like these type of guys. He didn't cry and bitch about it. He just went on. Okay. This is what's happened. Yeah. Let's get on with it.
So Ryan's going to be doing battle with former heavyweight Sly Lewis.
Okay.
Which is, he's fought for a Commonwealth belt, former Canadian champion. So it's a legit fight. This guy stepped up on 8 days' notice to fight arguably the baddest man in Canada right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah,
make sure everybody goes over to Eventbrite or just 3lionspromotion.ca and orders the pay-per-view. I think it's only $34 and you're going to get to see Ryan Rosicky, who's, I don't know if he's going to win a world title, but I think he'll challenge for one at some point.
Yeah, I think so. And again, like we talked about, there, he's got a good stock.
Yeah.
If you go back to his hometown, he has a huge following.
Huge, huge,
huge following. And that makes a world of difference. I mean, if you remember the boxer Ricky Hatton from England. Now, of course, he was a great level boxer anyway. But really, his first ever professional boxing fight, if I'm right, he sold about 1,200 tickets. And the promoter was like, so the promoter just basically signed him up for a massive long deal. Frank Warren signed him up for a massive long deal and built him up, you know, and by like the 12th, 13th, 14th fight, he built him up like the guy next door. That's what he was. He went to the pub, played darts. He loved a Chinese. He loved a curry, all of these things that the normal man does.
Yeah.
And he got him into a good Sky Sports deal and it worked out brilliantly. But what he had is the clout of people that followed him. So if you've got a cloud of people to follow you, it adds so much more to the table when you're negotiating something, you know. Same with Conor McGregor. It's the same.
Very true. Yeah.
You know?
Conor was able to build up a brand for himself from nothing and then become a multimillionaire.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, like I said, he done it brilliantly. He realized he's got a whole country behind him. Like if you go to Ireland, like a great-great-granddad would know who he is.
Really?
Like, you know. Okay. That's amazing, really.
It's virtually unheard of unless your last name's Tyson.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Or Ali. True. Those are the only ones I could think of.
Yeah.
So you being from the UK, let's talk about a couple of UK boxers then that are going to fight, and that's Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua.
Yep.
What's your thoughts on both men?
We'll start with Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua is is a strong guy, very strong, very confident, very fit, lives and breathes the sport without fail. He's got a great coach. He's actually got great coaches, a good team behind him. And he has, for me, the best promoter probably in the world, which is Eddie Hearn.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Dana White too, but Eddie Hearn as well for boxing. But yeah, he has took boxing to the next level. But what he got is he got Anthony Joshua, who was a big, strong guy, who won the Olympics. And he, again, did exactly what we talked about earlier with Ricky Hatton. Mm. Got him on a long-term deal, built him up, gave him a couple of older names. He knocked them out. And then, you know, if you look at his last few fights before all this shit, he had 90,000 people at Wembley. It's nuts. You know, pay-per-views through the roof and everyone watched it in England, etc. Then the flip side, you've got Tyson Fury, who, 6'9", he moves like, I've never seen a guy that size. I've got to be honest with you, I've never seen a guy that size move like him.
No.
I don't know if you recently saw something about 2-3 days ago. He's training in America.
Yeah.
And he's training next to a lightweight, I think.
Yeah.
He's the same speed.
Yeah. He's fast.
The same speed.
Yeah.
Now, what he doesn't have, which Joshua does have that one punch knockout for sure.
Yeah.
Fury, again, you know, what he did to Deontay Wilder was ridiculous. I never thought he was going to do that in a rematch.
No.
But he was very smart about it. He came in heavier.
Yeah.
And he just put his weight on him. And basically just made him quit.
He was a bully.
So, but he's very, very, like, tactically brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, and he moves excellently. And, you know, like, I from where I come from, there's a lot of gypsies. And, yeah. And they run the amateurs boxing scenes. They are, like, the best boxers in the amateur scenes. Okay. And unfortunately, sometimes due to discipline, or most of the time due to discipline, when they switch to pro or are about to, they never really fulfill it. And then, of course, then you've got Billy Joe Saunders and you've got Tyson Fury that came through. So they're now like a beacon of light. So you're going to start seeing a lot of gypsy guys coming through. And they've got some amazing, amazing fighters, really have. But they learn how to fight the art of boxing. That's the difference. If you look at Billy Joe and you look at if you look at Fury, they've learned the art of boxing.
Yeah.
They move their head, they're in and out, the footwork's unbelievable. So for me, and it's not just because it's MTK either. For me, Fury has this. I think he has this.
Yeah.
But this is heavyweight boxing. That's why it's so exciting. That's why it gets the biggest pay-per-view, you know, draw. Because it's one punch away, really. I know it's every fight, but with heavyweights, it's just something different, isn't it?
It's very different at heavyweight. I also think Tyson Fury wins in the mental aspect. He's gone through so much crap in his life. You've seen him get up like The Undertaker against Deontay Wilder. I don't think Anthony Joshua hits as hard as Deontay.
No, I don't think anyone does, to be fair. But he's got like an untrained punch, is what I call it.
Wow,
it's like a street punch.
I don't know.
He just has it.
I don't know if it's power or you don't see it.
Well, remember, he's light too. He's only like, what's he, 210 or something, 2.5 pounds?
He's
something like that, isn't he?
231 when he fought the fight.
Yeah, he's just got crazy, crazy power.
Yeah.
And like you said, but it fits his name. It's wild.
Yeah,
he's wild. But when it hits you, the guys go out, you know.
I think that Tyson Fury can take AJ's best shots. I don't know if AJ can withstand the amount of punishment that Tyson Fury will give him.
Yeah, it's also like, you know, Fury will move and make you miss too. When you're a big guy like that and you're missing, you're using up a lot of energy, you know.
It's a different kind of fight when you fight Tyson Fury, because the only way I can explain it is it's kind of like a track meet, but it's a fist fight at the same time, because Tyson doesn't run, but he's constantly moving.
Yep.
Constant movement, so it'll be fun to watch.
He's got the weird movement. He sort of goes like this, doesn't he? And then sort of like he does weird things, but you're thinking, why are you doing that? You're not even doing anything. You're just sort of standing in the middle, but it just works for him, doesn't it? And he just creates these angles.
Well, he's
and
moving.
He's an excellent boxer. There's no denying it.
Well, he's moving like that, though. He's constantly throwing punches too, slapping you in the face, talking shit.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. I don't think there's a heavyweight on the planet that can beat him right now.
No, I don't think so. And he's only 32, don't forget.
Very young.
Yeah.
And he only wants a couple more.
Yeah, I mean, look, they signed a two-fight deal.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I never liked these two-fight deals, personally. I just think, like, you fight, and then, okay, if it's a close fight, you know, like the Wilder fight, then, of course, have a rematch.
Yeah.
But I never liked the two-fight deals. And the other thing as well, I mean, obviously I'm English, but I'd love the fight to be in England.
Yeah.
But it's very hard at the moment. So but if they could have that fight in England, Wembley, or one of the big stadiums there, it would be, especially after the shit year everyone's had, and England had it bad too, it would just bring, you know, everyone together for boxing. Let's be honest with you, you know.
You know why they signed these two fight deals, right?
Go on.
Because shitty people make them. And by shitty people, I mean gangsters. And so let's say Tyson Fury loses the first fight.
Yep.
They fight again. They pay Anthony Joshua off to dump the second fight, and then they have a massive trilogy.
Oh yeah, I get the business side of it, right? Yeah. I thought you meant it was a different angle. Yeah, no. I get the business side of it completely. But just you know, it's just a fighter heart.
Yeah.
Whoever wins, and if Fury knocks him out in great fashion in say 6-7 rounds, there's no point in the rematch.
No.
And same with Joshua too. If Joshua knocks out Fury, and I think both of them might walk away from the sport afterwards, win or lose. Because they're going to make a shit ton of money.
I'd like to see
who else is there really. No
one.
I'd
like to see them both walk away with all their faculties in check.
Yeah.
They got more money than they know what to do with. Their kids will be set up. Good. Good for you.
Grandkids will be set up. You know, they've got generational wealth right there.
Yeah. It's sad when you see some of these guys. I'll use Chuck Liddell as an example. When he's in the ring, he's killing it. He's the champion, and then he gets knocked out, and then he gets knocked out again, and knocked out again, and then comes back after 8 years and gets knocked out again. It's sad.
You know, I love Chuck Liddell, and I'm sure you did too. He was sort of the rise of UFC when it was building, and he had this, you know, certain look about him. It was like a fat six pack.
Yeah, it was
the weirdest six pack I've ever seen. Yeah. It was just bulging out. I was like, yeah, maybe I could come back and get a fat six pack. But and he would knock people out, the weirdest, like, you know, hard punches and you know, sprawl and brawl was a big thing then. And he was just great at that. You know, what he did to Randy Couture was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then when he got knocked out once, I was like, ooh. And then he got knocked out again. I was like, stop this now, stop. But, you know.
Well, a lot of people attribute Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin to the rise of the UFC. I don't.
No.
I give it to Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture.
Yep. You've definitely got a case, 100%.
They've had the greatest trilogy the sport's ever seen at that time.
Yep, 100%.
So you mentioned Forrest Griffin to somebody who's 18 years old right now. They're probably not going to know who he is.
No.
You say Chuck Liddell? There's a real good chance they will.
Yeah, that's true.
He's definitely one of the biggest names the sport's ever produced for a guy that didn't do a whole heck of a lot of talking.
That is also true. didn't think about that. You're right.
He's He was terrifying back in the day with his mohawk and his goatee.
Yeah. Chinese symbols here.
Yeah, his Kempo karate tattoo on his arm, just starching dudes. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I think you're right. I never thought about it like that, but I think you're right.
I think he's the biggest star the sport's ever produced at that time.
Yeah, and it, like I said, because he was knocking people out, that's what people wanted.
Yeah.
And when he was fighting like people like Randy Couture that tried to wrestle him or Ortiz, they couldn't get him to the floor, you know. So that style started to develop of, I don't have to get took to the floor. I can stay up, you know.
You don't have to smash guys out on the ground. You can knock them out standing up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Billy Joe Saunders is another name you brought up too. Let's talk about him real quick because he's going to fight Canelo.
Well, look, the thing is with this fight is no one's giving Billy Joe Saunders a chance at all. He's undefeated. He's a great mover. A little bit, I must admit, inconsistent with fights. He hasn't had that many fights.
Yep.
You know, he could have fought a hell of a lot more, but things happen, injuries, or he couldn't get fights or just whatever. But if anyone can beat Canelo, it's Billy Joe Saunders.
Yeah, let's hope he's not on PEDs, though, this time.
Who? Canelo?
No, Billy Joe got popped for PEDs against
him. Yeah, but so is Canelo for the, you know, that mysterious beef.
That's true. So,
but how I see it is this, if anyone can, it's Billy Joe Saunders.
Yeah, I agree.
Because He doesn't give a shit.
No.
He doesn't give a shit. There's a difference with Billy Joe Saunders. He doesn't, you know, like some people have like the stage fright.
Yeah.
And it might take him a round or two. He doesn't have that. He really doesn't. He's got, that's what Fury's got too.
Yeah.
These guys are like, I told you about their background, that they've seen a lot of things from a really young age of what's gone on. This is nothing to them. And he's training hard from all accounts. He's already, I think he's already over in Dallas, I think
so.
Training.
Yeah.
And he's taking it super seriously. But like I said, we are talking about Canelo probably at the moment's pound for pound king.
Damn it. Everybody says that and I don't agree.
Okay. Who would you say?
Bud Crawford.
Oof. My favorite. My favorite.
I think so. He's the best.
Terence Crawford is actually my current favorite boxer.
Okay.
However, I think he's one or two fights away from being pound for pound. I just think once he fights a big name, which he deserves to fight a big name,
100%.
You know, the big name, and I think he will knock someone out. I'll tell you what I like about Terence Crawford. He's old school.
Yeah.
I love it. I just forget all this razzmatazz shit. He just goes up the mountains and trains up in the snow. Mm-hmm. And then he goes back to his house and he's got his kids running around everywhere and he's got the gym there and he just trains hard and he just goes in the ring and he fucking kills people. And that's, he doesn't like do all the trash talking like some of the other guys do. Don't get me wrong, he talks a little bit.
Yep.
But he's just a killer. He's like, it reminds me of like a Marvin Hagler. He used to go in there, train hard, get in there and just take people out, you know? And that's often lost nowadays because of social media and things like that, or people wanting to earn more money like Conor McGregor and going down that route. So
I like Bud Crawford because he reminds me of the Executioner.
Bernard Hopkins?
B-Hop, yeah, Bernard Hopkins. I really like
him. The thing is with Bernard Hopkins, he wasn't a finisher like Terence is.
No.
You know?
But B-Hop's an animal, and he just go in there and beat people up.
Yeah, again, he didn't have no fear, but you look at his background, you know, coming straight out of jail and learning how to fight, like, you know?
He's got an amazing story.
Let
me drop a gypsy name on you that fights in bare knuckle boxing. It's Jimmy Sweeney.
Don't know him.
You don't know him?
Is he the guy with the tattoos here?
No. Jimmy Sweeney is probably the greatest bare knuckle boxer of all time.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Sorry, I do. Yeah. Do you know what? I don't follow bare knuckle too much. Don't get me wrong. It's got my attention.
Yeah.
Because I've actually got an old student who now lives in Miami called Jake Boswick. Mm-hmm. He now fights down there, and he's got a multiple fight contract with bare knuckle. Is it BKFC?
Yep.
Yeah, he's got a multiple fight contract with them. He's fighting soon with them. So I only really follow him. But since I've been on the page, I know the guy you're talking about, yeah. And there's another guy as well. I think he's is he Vietnamese or something? Or Mongolian?
Franco?
Might be, yeah.
Yeah,
he's good too.
Yeah, he's the number one right now. Jimmy Sweeney's been out for a while. But you go back 5 years, Jimmy Sweeney was pound for pound best BKFC fighter probably of all time. I brought him up because he's got an interesting style, and it's a gypsy style. He's just flaily all over the place.
Yeah, but like I said, they fight on their caravan sites from literally as soon as the day they can walk, and you know, and they learn how to move, and because they're fighting bare knuckle as kids too, you can't fight in close. First of all, you get your hands smashed to pieces and you get your face smashed to pieces. So you've got to learn the art of it, of fighting a distance, score, hit once, do damage, get out.
Yeah.
So that's how they learn. And when they transition into boxing, of course, they, you know, picked up the art and the footwork is already there.
I think there's a place for this bare knuckle boxing, but
I do.
The only thing I don't like about it is they're taking the old MMA guys and throwing them in there. I don't like that. Leave them alone.
That's pure business move just to try and build it up, which I absolutely understand. However, like, the problem is if you've got a young kid coming up now, they're going to choose boxing, Thai boxing, or MMA.
Yep.
They're not going to go to bare knuckle boxing.
No.
And that's how it would probably be for a while. But when I watched my old student fight a few months ago, some of them got some good skills. It's not what it used to be. It used to be just like, fuck. Like
street fight.
Fuck, like in a bang. Yeah. And now they're moving a little bit. They're realizing there's more skill to it. So that's going to evolve, I think. It's going to take a while to evolve, but I think it will. But they need to put these old names in to get the attention on it, you know. And they're giving away a lot of money to these guys too.
I did really enjoy Artem Lobov versus Pauly Malignaggi. I enjoyed that fight because it was even. Artem has no business boxing. And Paulie Malignaggi has no business fighting MMA.
No.
So let's meet in the middle and do a bare knuckle fist fight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Now, that was an interesting one. That really was. And but it was horrible to watch, though.
It wasn't technically great.
Yeah, because I don't think you can fight like Paulie Malignaggi in bare knuckle. You know, it's so difficult. You can't hang on the ropes and try and roll and shit. It's not going to happen. Plus, the rule is you can actually grab the head and start working inside too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, when you got the grip of the hand, it's totally different from the glove. I like all fight sports. So, I'm interested from a promoter point of view. I'm watching it going, I wonder how far this will go. I wonder if this will be allowed in Alberta.
Right. So, what was
you guys have got enough rednecks that would do it, I'm sure.
Oh, fuck yeah. what was interesting when I watched that Paulie Malignaggi Artem Lobov fight is Paulie was calling for Conor McGregor to do that fight. I don't think it would have went the same way for Paulie. I think Conor would have murdered him in that.
Murdered
sport.
Him. But Conor doesn't need to do that. Like, you know, let's be honest. He doesn't need to do that. We all know that. You and I know that.
Yeah.
But he would have murdered him for sure.
Oh.
But, that was from that sparring video they did, didn't they? Do you remember? And it sort of went into this. And I think Conor was just laughing afterwards when Lobov won. He was just like, that's the end of that one.
Yeah, they won't hear shit from him ever again. The only time you ever heard was from when Poirier knocked Conor out.
Of course. Yeah, that's it.
But you got to kick a dog while he's down. That's how the world works, I guess, these days.
Get an extra few likes, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it is what it is.
Well, we're up at the hour mark, man. I really enjoyed talking to you today. I'd like to bring you back on again.
Absolutely. Look, when we announce things for the summer, let's get back on, if you wouldn't mind. If you'd have
100%.
Me on. And then we can talk about, you know, the matchups that are happening on that. That'd be great.
If there's ever anything I can do to help you hype up any of these fights, don't hesitate to send me a message, send me some photos, and I'll get something going.
Thank you very much. That means a lot.
Guys, again, my sponsors are all found on linktree.com/T, the Final Shot Podcast. Hit them up. Make sure, if you guys enjoyed the episode, to give us a like, a subscribe. Kieran, what's your Instagram handle so people can follow you?
Just Kieran Kettle. And if you want to ever come and train with me, I'm at this gym. You can see Elite here. There you go, Elite. We're based in Calgary. We've got two gyms in Calgary, Elite Brayside and Elite Martial Arts, which is in Shepherd, Southeast. So, yep, hit us up if you want to do some training with me. And, follow my promotions, which is Muay Thai World Cup. And we will be launching MTK Alberta probably next month as an Instagram handle too.
Guys, thanks for tuning in. That's the final shot.